You are listening to KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg. Altogether, we make up Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, member-supported community radio. We also stream live on the web at kzyx.org. Support for KZYX comes from our members and the Ukiah Natural Foods Co-op. Ukiah Natural Foods has served Ukiah Valley since 1976 with 100% organic produce, locally raised meats, and wellness products. Ukiah Natural Foods on the corner of Gobi and State in downtown Ukiah. Stronger together. More info at ukiahcoop.com.
Mind if I sit down? Everything you pray for, everything you play for me.
Hi, and welcome to Be More Now. My name is Blake Moore, and tonight I'm interviewing award-winning author, trainer, and public speaker, Holly Steele. She's renowned worldwide for her trailblazing service philosophy, and we'll be discussing the basic tenets of kindness, silver linings, gratitude, and fortitude, all of it mixed with a healthy dose of levity and creative playfulness, which describes Holly to a T. But first, here's one of Holly's songs, a song she calls Where Is That Store?
You can always buy more, but tell me, please, where is that store? Don't worry, they say, insurance will pay. Whatever you're missing can all be replaced. Then show me the pictures of my wedding day, when I walked down the aisle in my grandmother's lace, and the necklace passed down through generations as a treasure, the one that mere touching brought me so much pleasure. My big picture window has blackened and shattered. I'm left in the rubble of all that once mattered. It's only stuff, you can always buy more. But tell me, please tell me, where is that store? Give me directions, I want to go there. Could they sell me some comfort when life isn't fair? Tell me, please, where is that store? Tell me, please, where is that store? Will they have the dishes that belong to my mom? The scrapbook with snapshots from my senior prom? And a travel department with all my collections from sweet favorite places, my hand-picked selections, my beloved old bathrobe that felt like a friend. If I could find that, it could help my heart mend. But I can't replace anything on this list, which helps me to see what it meant to be rich. It's only stuff, you can always buy more. But tell me, please tell me, where is that store? Give me directions, I want to go there. Could they sell me some comfort when life isn't fair? Tell me, please, where is that store? store. As we dig through our questions, our sorrow and rage, will the phoenix arise to begin a new stage? If I could surrender, if I could release, could I find grace? Could I find peace? It's only stuff, you can always buy more. But tell me, please tell me, where is that store? Give me directions, I want to go there. Could they sell me some comfort when life isn't fair? Tell me, please, where is that store? Tell me, please, where is that store?
So before I bring on Holly Steele, I want to tell you a bit about her. Holly is a trailblazing service philosopher who innovated a method of training based on her 17 years as a world-class concierge. Her clients include Disney, Nordstrom, Aveda, American Express. And after more than 30 years of experience, she has parlayed that work into 6 books, including The Art and Science of the Hotel Concierge, and a 3 award-winning instructional DVD, and she also has custom designed the corporate service training programs for the Hilton and the Hyatt hotels worldwide. Her latest venture, called Help Me Holly, is an online fast-track fundamentals course that can be viewed at hollynow.com. To learn more about Holly, or watch her TED Talks or other videos, or read her blogs and articles, you can visit thankyouverymuchinc.com. The conversation you're about to hear was recorded a couple of days ago.
Holly, it's so wonderful to have you with me right now on the phone for Be More Now.
Thank you, Blake. Thanks for thinking of me and for wanting to do an interview.
So, and we've known each other for years, and it's like, what a great time for someone like you, such a practicer of gratitude, and you have so much positive energy and creativity, and you've done so many amazing things in your life. I thought it would be a good time for you and I to have this conversation and sprinkle a little positivity dust out into the radio waves.
Oh, that would be my pleasure. I'm sprinkling fairy dust right now.
All right. Well, you have a master's degree in education, and I know you taught school and live in San Francisco. Are you from San Francisco originally? Why don't you talk a little bit about your background and all the different ways that you got to be where you are today?
Well, I'm from Cleveland.
Okay.
I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and if I don't know, we'll see if my Midwest accent comes out in this. It depends. If I'm tired, I'll all of a sudden I'll say care and package. I grew up in the suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio, and from a really, really lovely family. I really adore my family, but I just couldn't stay in Cleveland. So I left really to go to college and didn't really come back. So I got my master's degree in the 4 years because I just stayed there all summer and kept going to school. And I taught school for several years. I taught in Cleveland. I did go back home for a little bit, and then I went to New York and I taught school there. But I always wanted to live in San Francisco from the time I was a little girl. So I just moved to San Francisco, and guess what? There were no jobs. There were absolutely no jobs for special educators in San Francisco in the 1970s. I just couldn't get one. And so I got a job working in a hotel lobby, and I became a hotel concierge, and I fell madly in love with it. And that's how I became the first female concierge in the United States and in the world, actually, to be a member of an international concierge association. So I really got so into being a hotel concierge. I loved it. And I stayed there for 17 years until I wrote a book about how to be one so I could be a teacher again.
When did you start this?
I started my career at the Hyatt. It was called the Hyatt on Union Square then. It's now, it became Grand in the early 90s. It's the Grand Hyatt San Francisco. That was 1976, so it was at the Bicentennial, and I started my career then as a hotel concierge, but there really weren't any. I was selling tour tickets in the back of the lobby at the Hyatt and read about a hotel concierge and basically turned it all around and became the concierge instead of the tour ticket seller.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started. So it was 1976. And then really early, though, Blake, I mean, so early on in it, I thought, oh, wow, this is fabulous. I could teach this. I'm going to write about this. I could teach this. And so by the time I left my position in 1992, everyone thought that I had written two books because I talked about it so much. But I wrote the first textbook on how to be a hotel concierge, and I left in 1992 after that book was first published. And so, yeah, that's how that all happened. So that was, and so I've been out doing teaching and training people how to think and act like a world-class concierge ever since.
And did you notice being a woman and the first woman doing that, that there were, was that ceiling that you had to?
You know, yes and no. I think that there was a part of me that just loved the work. I was really good at it.
Mm.
And so I just loved it. It loved me.
Mm.
I was all about the positivity and the love and the spirit. And I never got into the politics. I mean, there was one moment where I was at a meeting and there was a European concierge there and I was the only woman in the room, but he walked around and he gave everyone his business card except for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, okay. So in those days, I mean, I was really young, and so I don't think
right.
I would do this today. But then I walked around, give everyone my business card except him. But that was like
these
the
days, you would actually
thing.
Give a card to him. Also, you would say,
right,
hey, here's my card, right?
Right. I mean, you know, but yeah, I definitely would have handled it differently today. But I never was into the politics of it.
Mm-hmm.
I always was. I just wanted to separate myself from it. I mean, I understood what was going on. But I had a friend, a woman named Marjorie Silverman, who was a concierge in Chicago a little bit later, but, you know, in that same time. She became the international president of Le Clé d'Or. And she used to say, this is like the Pope being a woman. I mean, it was really a big deal. And Marjorie took all that on. And so I didn't have to. I could just stay positive and in the love and the spirit and the education, and that was my role. But Marjorie did all the other stuff. And so, you know, there were women who did do that. I was not one of them, but I was the first one. So I did open up the doors, and I just always felt like I belong here.
Right.
I'm supposed to be here.
That's great. I feel that there is so much potent information beneath that. Because that's one of the biggest challenges when, as a woman, I've encountered all sorts of things. And I feel like in many ways I've done the same thing as you, is I've just not denied my truth, but just I love what I'm doing so much. Like that water off a duck's back, but still going forward exactly as I am, rather than trying to adapt and fold and bend into what they're trying to make me. So you just really expressed that so beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have to admit, in the beginning,
yeah.
I just want to tell you this because you'll appreciate it because you're into costume. I did wear I had a morning suit made for me, so I had
uh-huh.
a skirt instead of the pants, and I had long tails and everything, so I looked like the concierges of the old world used to look like in a morning suit. So I had one specially made for me.
Uh-huh.
As years went on, you know, I didn't do that anymore, but that's how I started. You know, once that one of my uniforms had like I had a tie and things like that.
Right.
But it got a lot softer as the years went on.
I love that you did that. And that's the thing, you know, you have to adapt on one level, especially then. I mean, I got into the finance world in the 80s, in the early 80s, and that was definitely a man's world and what I had to go through to see that. And I found my own way through it by wearing bright purple suits and doing cartwheels,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
we all
right.
find our
yeah.
way to kind of, and they thought I was different, but I was also intelligent and a go-getter, so I was accepted, even though it was like, that's not appropriate corporate behavior, you know?
Like, oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so appropriate corporate behavior. I wasn't good at that either.
Yeah, I can imagine, which is why you branched off and did it your way, right? And that's what you've been doing since, what, 92, you said, is when you
Well, that's
shifted.
When I left, but I even, you know, even as a concierge, I was really a trailblazer, you know, and I can remember once I had a leopard scarf around my neck in one of my uniforms, and I think it was HR that came to me, and they said, listen, Holly, it's called a uniform because it's supposed to be uniform. Like, you can't wear a leopard scarf with it. Oh, okay, sorry.
Sneak it on and put it on during lunch.
I'm going to stop us for just a moment and let you know that you're listening to Be More Now. I'm speaking with Holly Steele, who's an author and trailblazing service philosopher.
So then you wrote your books, and then you shifted your career a little bit and became a professional speaker and a trainer. So I want to talk about what you created next.
Sure. Thank you. Well, you know, the funniest thing is I started this because, you know, like I said, I was like writing this book for, you know, 17 years until I got it complete and got a publisher, which Simon & Schuster was a real publisher, and you know, too. And I had this whole dream, and they were going to teach it in hotel schools and stuff. And then Cornell said to me, well, you know, it's just too practical. That's what they told me. They teach theory. If that's what they said. I'll never forget that phone call. And then it was like, well, we don't teach the concierge. Yeah, I know. That's why I wrote this book. Well, we don't teach it. So, it was, you know, it wasn't – I don't want anybody who's listening to this think that just to create a brand-new career, make something up completely
right.
That's never been done before, it's just a complete slam dunk, and everybody goes, oh, what a great idea. Why didn't I think of that?
Right.
You know, it was very challenging. To leave that career, and because honestly, Blake, I believed that my last name was at the Hyatt, because I called everyone, hi, it's Holly at the Hyatt, hi, this is Holly at the Hyatt, this is Holly at the Hyatt, and so my identity was completely wound up in this. I mean, I was really wrapped up in this, and in the 17 years that I was Holly at the Hyatt, everybody took my calls. I would tell you that I never had anybody who didn't take my calls. And so before that, what we talked about, I was a teacher, and then I was Holly at the Hyatt, and then I was on my own, and I was trying to get people to understand customer service as an art form, and I'd written these workshops, and nobody called me back, and everybody was in a meeting. And I'm like, what do you mean everybody's in a meeting? Like, how come nobody was in a meeting for 17 years? Nobody was in a meeting.
Wow.
And now everybody was in a meeting when I called. And so, you know, I was pretty much fetal around it and
right.
Thinking, wow, now what? And so, you know, we refinanced our house and we, you know, so I would have enough money to get through a year or two to make this thing happen. And that was almost 30 years ago, really. So it worked. And I did it, but it wasn't the world's easiest thing to do. And I'm not complaining about it. It's just I think it's important to understand that it's just like not – that there's so much – that when you see the tip of the iceberg, there's just so much that's underneath it
right.
That you have to persevere
right.
To get through, to believe in something. And I the truth is I still believe – and God only knows with COVID what's going to happen with the world of the concierge, but that when you can be a great concierge, really
yeah.
At the top level of that, it's really an art form, and it's incredible. And I wanted to share that understanding and that passion with people, and I still believe that. So it really comes from a place of passion and love, and I wanted to take what we know in hospitality and what we know as professional and excellent concierge and bring that into any business who would listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had the opportunity to do that, and it's really been a gift to be able to do that. And there are still people who be like, what? Who wants to know about that? and yet there's enough that do. So, you know, since the textbook, I've written several other books on customer service. And I mean, I call it customer service, but at this point I just tell the truth what it really is, which is spiritual principles. Because that's really what you need to work with people.
Right, like it's that idea that we call emotional intelligence, spiritual principles. It's that recognizing the other as yourself and how would you want to be treated. And, you know, one of the things to get through that is helping people realize that they actually want to be treated better. Because I always think of people that are hard on other people, it's just because they're really hard on themselves. And often that just translates out into the way they deal with the world beyond themselves. One of the things that I think helps me find compassion when I'm dealing with someone who's really challenging and I think, oh, step back. What must it feel like to be that person? It must be really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm sure, is part of what you, you know, your company is called Thank You Very Much. Isn't that what you call it?
It is. It's called Thank You Very Much Incorporated. So I've, and for a long time I used Elvis as a metaphor about being, because at the end of every song when Elvis used to curl up his top lip and say, thank you very much. And then I would, you know, and so I would just say, well, that's really it, everybody. That's the bottom line of business, isn't it? That's it. And on my business cards, the front of the card says, what business are you in? And if you open it, it says, if you're not in the thank you business, you're probably not in business.
Right.
Because that is the common denominator of everyone who works with people. You want them to walk away and go, thank you. Thank you. That was really nice. Thank you. And then, of course, every time you hear thank you as the service provider, you get a little bit of a boost in there.
Yeah.
And you get your juice. And so if your idea is like you create the thank you, you get the thank you, everybody wins and everybody walks away happy and you say, next, and may I help you? And that is how the energy keeps flowing, and there's very little when you're really working with people that's black and white, except that thing that you were just talking about, that all people have a real desire to be seen,
right,
and to be listened to, and to be understood, and to be heard. That is universal. And if that is where we can focus our attention, that is where you'll thank you. It's simple. It's not easy.
No, it's not. And I think that's one of the challenges that I feel that most of us can relate to because of the customer service agents that we have to deal with the companies that we're trying to call on the phone or have a product to return or have a question or cell phone bill or whatever it is that we are calling this company, and then we get somebody and that person is perhaps reading a script, doing their best to get through. They're not spokespeople of the company. They have policies they have to enact. And I think that's frustrating for especially those of us a little bit older that remember the time when consumers actually were a little more right than they are now. And when there was a moment where you felt like the company cared about you more than just about getting your money, and that hoops you have to step through to return things, and there's all of this stuff. And when I'm dealing in that level, I always stop and tell the person, hey, I know you're just doing your job. If you hear frustration from me, it's not at you. And they always go, oh, thank you so much. They always thank me for having that. So I think that that's one of the reasons I also wanted to have you, is that we can say, oh, well, she's the hotel concierge and she's talking about people in the service industry. But really, we're all in the service industry because we're all serving each other as human beings.
Well, absolutely. And that even, you know, yes, all of it. Blake, and to, you know, like everybody wants to be seen and heard and belong and feel like you understand them. But the people who are focusing on having to be right or doing their policies, this is a top-down situation.
Yeah.
If you call Amazon, they're going to take your product back, and they're going to be nice about it, and they're going to call you back within 30 seconds. So why do they do that? How do they do that? That's a whole other story. But why do they do it? Because they recognize that that is an enormous value of their company. They teach it. They've been a stellar example of how to do this because they focus on it. Just like, you know, people will call me all the time and say, oh, we want to be just like the Four Seasons. We want to be like the Four Seasons Hotel. And I say, okay, I'll tell you how to do that. But I am thinking that once I tell you what it takes to actually be like the Four Seasons, that you'd probably like to be like the Four Seasons without Frankie Valli. because it's really hard. It's 100% focus on it. This has to be really a primary thing. So when those people who are, when you're in the middle with the people, it's the managers, it's beyond that, it's the company, it's the culture that's creating this.
Right.
And sometimes you just may get a stinker of a person. But for the most part, they're told they have to do that, which
yeah.
is, it's hard to understand why companies don't get that 100% of their revenue comes from their customer. I don't quite understand how companies miss that point.
So why don't you talk a little bit about what you teach?
You mean in the spiritual
just
sense?
Kind of like a little bit.
Well,
you know, I know
yeah.
that if the idea of thank you very much is a branding of gratitude, and then maybe just a little bit about
yeah.
customer service is not just here's your thing, go ahead, have fun. It is more about the gratitude, but can you just dive in just a little bit deeper
sure,
about
absolutely.
Some of the tools or techniques?
Well,
I said, I think this is applicable to all of us in all of our lives. Could use this, and every individual as a customer in a grocery store, I can treat my checker like this, right? Like we can do this
right.
back and forth.
Yeah. Right. So one of the, okay, just a few of the things that I think are pretty powerful that I teach is that I have something that I call the me sign. And the me sign is that everybody wears one. It's a giant sign. I say it has flashing lights all over it. Me, 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 right? And everybody's wearing one. And as a customer service provider, if you're wearing one, and this is where one of the real problems comes in, with, especially in North American service, is that everybody's wearing the me sign, not just the customer. And so what we need to do as service providers is take our me and make it a we and look way beyond the behavior into the emotions that are happening underneath the behavior.
Mm.
Why is someone behaving like this? Why is someone acting entitled? What's going on with that? Where are they? What is the emotion? What do they need? Because once you get what your job is and you know how to do it, so whether you're a checker in a grocery store or the butcher or you're working in retail, whatever you're doing, if this behavior is in front of you, you can react to it with your own me sign, or you could take your me, turn it into a we, and ask yourself this really important question. What does this customer really need? And then how can I provide it? And then what do they really need? So if you look at entitled behavior and you go underneath that, you'll see what they really need
right.
is to feel important. So your job then is to do whatever you need to do to make them feel important. When you do that, for the most part, this behavior is going to shift because it's mostly not personality, it's behavior. So, and you can't really observe a personality, but you can observe behavior. So if people are acting as what we also might annoy people as someone who's completely clueless, like they don't understand if they went outside and it's raining that they needed, you know, that they need an umbrella. So that's another thing that would annoy a service provider. What do they really need? If you're acting confused or clueless, they need to feel safe.
Right.
And especially in today's world, people need to feel safe. What can you do to make them feel safe and comfortable? So you want to look at the emotions underneath. So that's a really big piece of what I teach. I also teach that your own emotional intelligence, I call it wear the turtle head of service, where you have to have a hard shell, stick your neck out, and
right.
be slower to respond with a negative trigger and not take everything personally, and then let go of having to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless it's something that is non-negotiable, like parking in a fire lane or right now wearing a mask
right.
or 6-foot distancing, it's pretty much hospitality and not medicine. So
right.
if you could let go of having to be right, your entire life would change. And these are all things that you can use in your personal life. I once had a client who called me and said, hey, Holly, I finally get that being right thing. It works on my most difficult customer, my ex-wife. So those are a few things. And then I do teach a few skills because these skills are really, really important and kind of difficult. So I teach listening because it's rare. I call it listening as an act of generosity, that we need to empty to listen. That's
right.
not so simple to do. Then I teach how to disappoint someone. I call it the wings of no, how to make no fly. And then I'll teach how to do a sincere apology so that it works. And so that's what I do in my work and in my classes and in video programs and in books and all of that. So it's been really fulfilling work because people remember it for many, many years.
And once again, I want to remind you that you're listening to Be More Now. The voice you're hearing is that of Holly Steele, a author and a lecturer, a TED Talk giver, and a trailblazing service philosopher.
I'm going to ask you, this is kind of a hard question, but it's something that I've had someone say to me. I have another friend who does trainings, and someone says, well, isn't it kind of teaching somebody the art of manipulation? And I'd just be curious to hear what you'd say about that.
Well, I think it's semantics.
Uh-huh.
I think that you know, you can call it manipulation and you can make it bad.
You can
call it customer service, and where you are focused on the experience of someone else,
mm-hmm.
that they have a really positive experience. You can call it your own personal and professional growth,
mm-hmm.
to understand how to get along with people. You can call it many things. I mean, you know, I think that if you are in a service position, what that means is that you need to accept that your job is to do something for someone else.
Right.
And for some companies right now, and some people feel like, I worked for one very large company last year, and they were like, we don't like the word service. Like, okay. Well, we think we're equal. Service means like you are in servitude of someone. Like, okay. It means that you need to do something for someone else.
Yeah.
And if you are committed to doing something for someone else, that includes focusing on their deeper needs,
mm-hmm.
so that you can reach those so that everybody can have a good experience.
Right.
But if you're just focused on your own me sign, then it doesn't work.
And if you just focus on your own me sign, that it is manipulation. But if you recognize the we sign, you recognize that by a sincere apology, you actually feel better too, because there's a reciprocal experience that you're not just making the other person feel better. You're actually getting that energy back. So it's a full circle versus a one-way current.
Well, yes. And for the most part, I would say most people don't go to work and go, wow, I really want to piss somebody off today. I mean, that's not really most people's attitude. They would like to create a good experience for everyone. Sometimes things go off the rails. When
mm-hmm.
they do, we really need to figure out these skills, because we're not born with these skills. These skills take practice, just like, you know, with your dancing. I mean, you're not born being the kind of dancer you are. You had to practice.
Right.
You had to make a commitment. You had to decide. Well, it's the same thing with this art form. It's just another art form.
Right.
And if you have a commitment to that art form, then all of these things become a part of it, and your own, something I made up years ago called the psychic salary, which is the other paycheck. It's what do we get out of serving someone else? And if someone believes that by offering your heart and your strongest ability to create an experience for someone else is manipulation, then you shouldn't be in that job.
Right.
Because you won't be earning any kind of a psychic salary, and go do something else and do everybody a favor.
Mm-hmm. This is another testament to your creativity, the way you have phrased things and come up with ideas. Like, who's not going to forget the spiritual salary? Like, of course, that's the return, you know. It's such a wonderful way of saying it.
Thank you.
I love your mind and how you think and what you've done. And so here we are now, right? We've got the COVID-19 pandemic. And how has your business changed? What are you doing differently? And what's happening for you now?
Well, I mean, everything's changed. I mean, basically, my business stopped. I mean, you know, all of the work I had, it all completely stopped. It's just decimated.
Did you travel a lot, correct? For
my gosh. Yes, I'm a huge traveler, and you're running around and doing classes and getting back on planes, and it's exhausting. And I loved it, and it was fun, and it basically stopped. So a lot of speakers are, you know, rushing to this whole virtual thing, and let's do this all virtual. And I have a few clients virtually, but I also at this point, some things have shifted and pivoted a bit. I have a fabulous new online program. It's called Help Me Holly, and I started it before the pandemic. I have a video producer that I work with. He said, hey, why don't you just come over to my place, and we'll just have you and me and the camera. Let's see what we get. So I'm like, okay. So I went over there, and we did a day and a half. Because basically people today, they like things in about one-minute bites. And so I just looked into this camera, and I just talked about service and the things that I teach in my classes, but I did them in about 90-second bites, up to 3 minutes, because teaching mm-hmm. the wings of no takes a couple of minutes. Anyway, I did 104 of them. So I was like, oh, okay. And then I left, and I thought, well, I think I did something here, but who knows. And so that was it. We had no idea what we were going to do with it. And then the pandemic happens, and my business partner, Jack, he's a Neil Diamond cover band, right? So his business was decimated. And so he took the first 2 months of the pandemic, and he put these 104 clips, we chose 72 of them, and he put them into a course called Help Me Holly that has testing and a certificate. So I have all this stuff online now. So I'm working with some schools mm-hmm. and adult education for this, and it's also just an individual program. Anybody can go on there, go to hollynow.com, and it says Help Me Holly, and you know, for $175 you can, you know, have something to train your team. It's a service fundamentals class. So that's something that I did that's virtual. I have a few clients. The funniest thing is I have somebody who asked me if I would do something on luxury hospitality, and he said, you know, maybe we could film it in L.A. I'm like, no, we can't film it in L.A.
Right.
Because
that means
10 hours away.
Why?
And I'm not doing that. And I said, tell you what, why don't we think of a redwood tree as luxury hospitality? And he's like, okay. And so now I've just been writing this whole thing about the luxury lessons from a redwood tree. And I'm having so much fun with it because, like, there's an ecosystem involved in
right.
hospitality and service. And, you know, there's also you have to have a bit of a thick skin to work with clients. And you have to be able to be flexible and on. So I'm having fun with that. And then I'm also, I told you in the beginning, I have a wonderful family, and I have a niece who's an artist, and she said, hey, Aunt Holly. One of my most favorite words, Aunt Holly. And she said, Holly, how about we do a book together? I'm like, okay. So we've just finished our first children's book, and one of the artists up here, a guy named Wes Lester. He helped me with, yeah, Lester, yeah, he's adorable, Wes. He helped me with the graphics of this thing. But my niece is the illustrator, and together we wrote our first children's book, which is called What Story Are You Telling Yourself? On Perception. And the next one we're doing is called Listening is a Gift. And I said, hey, Whitney, maybe we'll do all my training as children's books. So I'm playing with that a little bit, and we're on our second one. And probably by the time this is out, I'll have it on YouTube. I wrote something about a silver lining in the pandemic, which is recognizing service providers as people.
Yeah.
So that, like, who were before we were inconsequential and now we're essential.
Right.
And so to, like, to see us.
Right.
So just like what you were saying before. So I'm just doing a variety of things. And this other thing that's super cool that I'm doing is I'm on a team with the SBDC,
yeah.
which is part of the SBA, and I've done
Small
several
Business
workshops with them.
Right.
Yeah, the Small Business, yes. And this has been fantastic. But even since we talked last, Blake, something else happened. I'm doing something where I've just put together a panel because they asked me to do something on racial bias in the workplace, and I'm like, I can't do that. Of course not. I'm not qualified to do that. And the woman who I work with, she said, no, I want you to think about it, Holly. And so I thought about it, and I thought, well, no, I can't do it, but I could. Because of my background as a concierge, which the underlying theme of being a concierge is I know a guy who knows a guy.
Right.
I put together a panel, And it's a panel of people of color from all different walks of life and all really heavy hitters and fabulous people. And I'm going to moderate the panel. And I don't have exactly a date for it yet, but I'll let you know so you can add it when we do this. And
I'll include it on the website where this show is archived, too, so if someone's listening and wants to check back.
Right. It'll be about storytelling and also unconscious bias. And then what can we do? So that's been really humbling, and just the thing, conversation is so out there right now. It feels like we entered a portal for this conversation that even someone as far removed from it as me could be involved in it.
So, well, it's such an important conversation. It is the conversation right now, and it it's been the conversation really since, you know, for 100 years, and it's been underground for so long, and it's finally seeped to the surface again, and it's like, oh, you kind of can't heal from a deep systemic infection, but when it comes to the surface, you can actually start to insert some of your healing tools and start to heal the infection. I feel like this is what we have a deep sickness in this country and globally, but here especially, because on so many levels it went so deep underground that it wasn't acknowledged, not enough.
Yes,
go ahead.
I'm calling it a dialogue, not a conversation, that it just opens up something. But what's cool about it is that it's not a government platform. That's why everybody's saying yes to me, and so is saying yes, I'll be a part of it, because it's just to open this up is very thrilling, and like I said, to be part of it's really kind of humbling, and it just feels like, really, I'm doing this? So that's really interesting. So, and also, like, I suppose, Blake, you know, other than work, there's other silver linings of the pandemic, which are, I would have never stayed home this much. I let go of my place in Marin because it seemed kind of silly to have a place close to the airport that you can't go to. I do a lot of work in Napa with wineries. That's not happening. And I don't want to go to San Francisco right now. So I let it go. And just being up here has been a total gift for me. To be here, to be with friends, to be in nature, to walk in my beautiful, I call it my magic forest. And I have time to take classes and to learn new things. And I'm dancing every day. And I'm doing movement of medicine with a fabulous teacher named Dr. Deb Kern. And she's awesome. And I dance every day. And I'm just working at changing my own neural pathways to continue to not fall into the abyss and the hole of fear, and keep CNN totally at bay and keep dancing to "Hey Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine," because you have to do the work for this thing. It's just gonna happen if you don't work at it. So I'm doing all of the things that you need to do to stay in a place of hope and positivity in this time frame.
Yes, and while still actively doing your part to make a shift.
Right.
And that's the key, I think, is you're not just, okay, I'm going to focus on being positive all the time, but it's figuring out, okay, now that you've figured that out, how can you take that out into the circle around you? It doesn't have to be, I'm going to change the world. As you change yourself, everything around you changes. I have made a commitment to myself, and this is a silly sounding thing, but it's so potent, is every day I'm going to do something truly altruistic for somebody else. Every day. Mm-hmm. One thing. At least one thing. Some days it's more things, but at least one thing every day. And that might even mean reaching out to a friend that I'm not in the mood to talk, but I know what it's going to do for my friend when I call, because I know my friend's having a hard time. You know, things like that, that is truly an act of altruism, because it's easy to isolate. I have all sorts of friends who's like, I just don't feel like reaching out because I don't really know what to say. But you can find conversations like this one where you lift each other up. And that's what we need now. It is that we-ness that's so important.
I was just going to say, or you just say, I love you. And I'm thinking of you. That's it. That's enough.
That's enough. I always say I love you to my friends, and there's a few friends that don't usually say it back. They'll use the, you know, L-U-V word or, you know, oh, shucks, you too, or whatever. And I'm finding those friends are actually saying it back in more, like now they're saying it. It's interesting. And I think that that's, you know, one of the other silver linings of this time is that willingness to put oneself out there in these more uncomfortable emotional spaces, because we're already uncomfortable. We're uncomfortable. We're all uncomfortable, you know? And so, well, I'm already uncomfortable. Let me just put this on my sleeve too, you know?
I want to remind you that you're listening to Be More Now. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and I'm speaking with author, philosopher, Holly Steele.
Yeah, it's so important, you know, but something I think when you think that it's altruistic, sometimes it's even like it isn't altruistic. It really helps you too. And I just want to share this one thing because it's been so valuable in my life, just incredible. So one of my closest friends became a widow almost 2 years ago. And they were married around the same amount of time that Bill and I were. And, you know, she's a really, really close friend of mine. And I said to her at the time, I said, you know, Diana, I can't really do much except that what I could do is I could make sure that every single day that there's someone that you hear from that says, I love you and you're beautiful. And I could do that.
Right.
So I started to write to her every morning. So now we're on, 18, 19 months later that I've been writing to her every single day. And now she asked me if I'd put her son on it, too, so he's on the email, too. But, I mean, I think maybe, because this thing's going to go on so long, in the winter I might go through some of the letters and see what I have. But whenever I think that maybe I'm writing a book, I say, no, stop it. You're only doing this out of love. Like, just do this from the place, altruistic place of loving your friend. And sometimes, you know, they don't have anything to say. Sometimes they're really well done, and I say things that are beautiful, or I've written a lot during this pandemic because I like to write, and I also like to rhyme. And so I've written a lot of that sort of thing. But writing to my friend every day from this place of, I just want you to know that you're loved and seen and appreciated because your mate of 40 years died, I always think that I'm getting more out of it than she is.
Right.
So I totally get that.
Right. I want to just make sure I have enough time. We started the show with that wonderful song you did. You want to just talk a moment about that song? wonderments.
Because I like to write, and sometimes, you know, it's like I believe in the muse. And, so, you know, when the muse is there, you have to take advantage of her or it. And so when the fires were happening in Sonoma, what was it now? It's almost 2 years ago. I was so overwhelmed by that that I wrote that poem. And a close friend of mine named Janice Stanfield took that poem and put it to music for my big birthday last year. And so that's where that came from. And another friend of mine said, oh, Holly, you got to paint with your dark colors in that.
So and that's you singing, right? That's your voice.
Oh, no, that's my friend Janice.
That's
singing.
Your friend Janice.
No. Yeah, that is. God gave me a lot of talent.
Well, I thought God gave you that talent too, and I'm thinking, my goodness, woman, what can't you do? When you shared the song with me, I'm thinking, wow, okay, there's just another one.
Oh no! Oh no! 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 Definitely, definitely not. You don't want me to sing. But yeah, and I'm going to do an art show at Gualala Arch in October, so I hope people will come to that because it's called My Valuables, What Matters. And so the song is part of that, and the woman who I rented the home from in Marin is also a sculptor, and she took pieces from her cousin's home that burnt, and she took burnt pieces of wood and made the most amazing sculptures from that, and they're fabulous. And then I wrote a poem about it, and then I have Bill's going to take photographs of just the silliest things that matter.
Right.
And there'll be little short stories, and there'll be photography and short story and poetry and sculpture and that song. So it'll be different than we anticipated it would be, but we'll still, I think, if they let us into Gualala Arts, have an opening.
Right.
So
Well, they've been doing virtual openings in a lot of places. A few different artists have told me they had openings that happen, and then they've been creating these online exhibitions just to give a little bit of a take. But that's such a, it's really, it is difficult on the art. And it's just, like you said, finding ways to still feel like your voice is part of the story. And that might just mean being in the garden and writing about it, and trusting that, that those words will make you feel stronger. And so your example is, I'd like for people who are listening to find out how they can find out more about you.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm easy because I'm Thank You Very Much, Inc. And so, or so you just go to www.thankyouverymuchinc.com. So that's my website. Or you could just remember this, go to hollynow.com, and that's where all of my online programs are. And that is how to reach me, or Holly Steele, spelled S-T-I-E-L. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and do you have any, the one last message you hope a listener would walk away from our talk with today?
That I would hope that during this time that it could be an inspired time for you, that this forced pause could change you in the best possible way. And I recognize that everyone is in a different boat, but the same storm. But we all could take an opportunity in this phenomenal experience to learn and grow, and please dance through it.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Holly. What a gift you are to the world, and
thank you.
Keep up the phenomenal work. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, that concludes my interview with Holly Steele, award-winning author, trainer, and public speaker, who's renowned worldwide for her trailblazing service philosophy and her books on the subject of hotel concierge. To listen to this show again or to catch past episodes, please go find Be More Now on kzyx.org and click on the link to show archives. I'll be back on September 3rd with Michael Warr, an award-winning Bay Area poet, performer, and among other things, the poetry editor for Of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, published by W.W. Norton. And tomorrow at 9 a.m. right here on KZYX, you can catch Politics, A Love Story. This week, host Bob Bushansky will talk with Gerald Posner, author of Pharma, Greed, Lies, and the Poisoning of America. They'll talk about how today's big pharmaceutical companies sold hard drugs in the late 1890s and early 20th century, like Bayer inventing heroin and phenobarbital. They'll also explore the rise of the Sackler family of Purdue pharmaceutical fame, who created OxyContin and the opiate epidemic that has killed thousands of Americans. That's Politics, A Love Story, tomorrow, Friday morning at 9 a.m. right here on KZYX and Z. And I also have a few more announcements for you. On Sunday, August 9th, continuing their second Sunday free program, the Hindy Woods community is covering the Hindy Woods State Park day use fee for local residents from the following communities. That's Yorkville, Boonville, Philo, Navarro, Compshie, and Elk. Know your zip code and enjoy a free visit to the park and stroll the old-growth redwood groves and beautiful meadows. Hike the trails and unwind along the river. Day use is from sunup to 1 hour after sunset. And on Monday, August 10th, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Depression Bipolar Support Alliance Fort Bragg Peer Support Group is holding its weekly free support group meeting for individuals with depression, bipolar, and related mood disorders and or family members. The meeting's at St. Michael's Meeting Room, corner of Franklin and First Streets in Fort Bragg. For more information, contact Bailey Oaks at 964-7721. I'm going to end the show with a spoken word piece, Prayer for a Silver Lining, a creative ditty written and performed by Holly Steele. Thanks so much for listening to Be More Now, and I wish you a healthy, peaceful, expansive rest of your evening. Up next is Pulse of the Planet, followed by W. Dan, and as usual, great laughs, needed laughs from the Treehouse. So please stay tuned.
This is my prayer for the silver lining of 2020. The music is by my friends Janice Danfield and Tim Bays. We're all in this together. We'll really have meaning. If when COVID is over and we resume reconvening, we stop, say thank you. There's a real person right there. We're in this together. It's this life that we share. The everyday people we interact with every day. No more taking for granted all this interplay. Done with barking out an order to rush to a flight, never noticing the people right there within sight. If the front line of service simply didn't show up, the world would stop. There would be nothing, from a crop to a cup. Well, the world has stopped, and we can now see who has given it wheels. Maybe, just maybe, we can understand how it feels to work at a job where you are basically invisible, when in fact we're in this together is about being indivisible. We need to get it. We don't do this life alone. Stop it. Look up. Get off of your phone. Before quarantine, could you tell me the names of the grocery cashier? Did you notice the busboy or the bartender who served you a beer? Did you go to a meeting and hurry to make a deadline crunch, never noticing the people that served you your lunch? Did you ever think about the person who cleaned the toilets in a public place? Did you ever stop to say thank you or look at their face? All the people we thought were so inconsequential are now the ones that we call essential. Parts of the pandemic are ever so frightening. And others, I dare say, are truly enlightening. We're in this together. We are all responsible. Let's appreciate the people that make our lives possible. Well, the mailman, the trucker, the security person at the front gate, the box office, the bellman, the usher that finds you a seat when you're late, the food demonstrator, the garbage collector, the guard who helps kids cross the street, the concierge, the front desk, the myriad of people every day that you meet. So sing this, dance it, make it your committed way, thanking the people who help you get through the day.